This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 239 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com. And joining me on the line on the eve of his jaunt to the US of A from Melbourne via Skype once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate.
Pretty good. You must be excited.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just going to work, dude.
Just going to work. Actually, you must hate it. This is going to be like 2 weeks of work in 2 weeks.
I was figuring it out today. I think I've got 11 events in 7 days.
Wow.
So, yeah, I work myself hard when I travel. So,
to make up for when you're at home.
You have to work a little bit hard every once in a while, you know, just to see how the other people live.
Yeah, right.
So, yes, it looks going to be a good trip. There's a few things I'm looking forward to. I'm doing the fire station shoot in New York on Thursday their time, so Friday our time.
Yep.
It's going to be a pretty emotive shoot. I found out that, you know, they lost their captain and six of their crew on 9/11, so it's not good. It's going to have a fair degree of drama to the shoot, I guess.
A topical question, given the events in Washington over the last 24 hours, are they funded by the government or is it volunteer-driven?
The fire brigade?
Yeah.
No, I'd actually imagine it's done either by the state or by the city.
They're
very different over there than we are here, how things are done.
Right.
I wouldn't imagine it'd be any drama at all.
Okay. So they won't...
But apparently there's going to be no customs on, which is good, so I better get through pretty quickly.
Yeah, right.
And since the country's shut down, it's going to be...
No, that's awesome. Just so bizarre.
Oh, it's a great time to want to travel to the Americas.
I mean, hopefully, you know, by the time this podcast comes out on Sunday, you know, maybe hopefully... they'll have woken up to themselves and, you know, turned the switch back on. But, yeah. You know.
Just... This is when people power should get rid of politics. Because these politicians, they're just, I don't know.
It's just crazy.
They're just some bad, silly things.
I know I spoke about this a while back. I can't remember what country it was. I was reading this on a finance blog a year or two back. There was a country in the Mediterranean... And this was going back like 1,000 years or something. And they used to have this form of government whereby anyone could put their hand up and go, I want to be the prime minister / president, whatever the role was for head of state. And they would have that job for, you know, 1 year or 3 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But as soon as it was, you know, when their time was up, they returned to civilian life. So there was no such thing as a career politician.
Yeah.
And it meant that...
Flush had to face your peers when you went back. So if you,
absolutely. If you did some hard stuff. And it also meant that you had to be mindful of the decisions you made, how they would affect the common man, because once your term was up, you were going to be a common man.
You were
again.
The common man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think we could probably do with a little bit of that these days.
Yeah. Just, you know, make them all get into stock, put in stocks in the local market square or something at the end of every term and face the public.
Yes. Have a good old stoning with rotten fruit, as it were.
So we've got to do a little bit of a shout out this week, don't we?
Oh yeah.
We've got a little shout out to a very loyal number 8 or number 9 listener.
Oh, which one's
Brian
that?
Brian Horton, who commented on our Facebook page this week and called us crap, I think was pretty much what
he said that we sound like shit.
Called us number 2s.
Yeah.
Hello, Brian. So we can say this kind of, you know, bad humour about the Poms over there, but so he does. That's lovely. He sent us lovely message during the week saying he's enjoying the show, and we've made it to number 2 on his list of podcasts or photo podcasts. It could be like number 14 overall.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And so a little g'day to Brian.
Yes, thank you, Brian. Appreciate your comments.
If you send a message through Facebook and say awesomely lovely things about us, we'll give you a call out.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm pimping a little bit, Bruce. There's a bit of ego boosting. I think it was fairly subtle. I think I maybe got it through to the keeper without anyone noticing. I think we're okay.
That's good.
So what else has been up?
Well, I only had three things this week, and you wanted to keep it short because you've obviously got to pack for your flight tomorrow.
I've got my new backpack to pack.
So. Oh, have you? So it arrived. Yeah.
You did all my gear. I've got a whole bunch of new filters, new tripod. I've got the world's best ever tripod.
Oh, the Vel one.
For travel.
Yep. Oh, yeah, this is the really super duper compact one.
Yeah, little Velbon Rexy.
Right.
So it folds down to, 33 centimetres or something without the head on it, and it extends to my height at 6 foot.
My only concern with that, which is great, my only concern is something that light, does it become an issue? Like if you're outdoors, do you need to have a sandbag to hang off it?
Well, it's not actually that light because it's actually aluminium. It's not carbon graphite. So it's got a bit of heft to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a kilo or something in weight in itself. So it's not a super lightweight plastic thing.
Right.
So it's a quality construction. And at full height, which I said, when the camera's on, it's pretty much eye level to me at 6'2".
Yeah, nice.
And it feels pretty sturdy because you've got the weight of the camera and lens holding it down.
Yeah,
I'm in love. I'm in love with my new tripod because I'm not a big fan of lugging tripods around because they're too much work. But I'm even going to take this one to the US with me tomorrow, even though I never use them over there. But I'm still going to take it just for the fun of it.
Excellent.
You never know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so that was great, and I've got to pack the backpack and make sure I'm not forgetting any gear to take with me. And I got my new iPhone 5S today to pack up and take with me as well.
Oh, okay. I didn't realise you were upgrading your phone.
Oh, yeah, I'm a nerd.
Right.
I got myself so excited about the auto exposure thing we were talking about last week.
Yeah.
I thought, it's just going to be pretty cool to shoot some panos with over there.
Yeah.
So I said, why not? Yeah, okay. My contract was up in 2 weeks, so.
Oh, right. Oh, well, fair enough. You were due then.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a pretty sexy beast. I've got to set that up tonight too. So we've got lots. So we've got to get through this. There's no time to just chat along like this.
Fair
no
enough.
Time at all.
Well, one of the other things that I saw through, actually, I had this on my list for last week, and I accidentally put it in Gmail and didn't check Gmail before we recorded, so it sort of slipped through last week. And I'm sort of on the verge of being a little bit late with it. This is the terms and conditions for photographers for the International Naval Review, which is occurring in Sydney this week as we're recording.
The T's and C's.
That's it, yeah. So it's on from the 3rd till the 11th of October. So there'll just still be a few days left, when this podcast comes out. What really intrigued me about this was it seems like photographic rights for photographers being respected by the event organizer, which I thought was rather rare in this day and age. Someone did say to me, because it's the Australian government, they can't really claim ownership of the images. But it was very clear in the terms and conditions for this that, you would retain the ownership of your images. They would request permission, or they would reserve the right to use your images for promotional purposes, to obviously display those images because you've entered it into a photographic competition, but that you would own the rights to the images. And I thought, oh God, that's so rare these days. So
yeah, but it's as I said, maybe because it's governmental, who knows, but it is nice to have a little bit of empowerment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Doesn't happen often.
No, every other comp that you see, it's always, you basically sign away all rights to this, this image in perpetuity and, have
and
no
for a long time as well.
Yeah, that's right.
It goes on.
On and on. Yeah, so anyway, I thought that was nice. I'll chuck the link up there. So if anyone who is in Sydney is interested in going and photographing the Naval Fleet Review, there will still
be... You won't get shafted.
Yeah.
Well, not by the government for your photos.
Exactly. Yeah. Dear. Something that I saw just before we started recording, I haven't had a huge chance to read up a lot about it, is... The question was posed on DIY Photography: is Google planning to go head to head with Adobe? For a while now, you've been able to upload raw images to Google Drive. Like you can upload any image to Google Drive, but it won't always know what those files are or what application they are associated with or whatever. And it just so happens that with raw photographic image data, you can upload those images to Google Drive, and Google Drive now supports, I think I read, 70 cameras. So the raw images out of 70 different camera types are now supported by Google Drive, which means you can upload the raw data, like a raw image, not a JPEG,
yeah,
and Google Drive will actually allow you to open and view that image from the raw file, which means that they've essentially got a cloud-based raw converter. So it looks like an interesting story. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to read the whole story, but the link will be in the show notes. But the suggestion is that, you know, given time, Google are going to, you know, introduce image editing capabilities to this, which will kind of sort of become like a Nick in the cloud
sort of Nick in the cloud
offering. Yeah, so interesting, yeah. Interesting times ahead. So
things to watch out. Is it, you know, with people not being happy with Adobe's move to cloud and everything else, and being a subscription model, who knows? Is it going to be a viable alternative?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, up until now, almost all Google services are free. Whether or not this would be like that, or whether it would have a small fee attached to it, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, they do charge for Nick software. They own Nick.
Yes. Oh,
so
yeah.
So that's a charge thing, I guess. So.
Yeah, but that is still software that you download and install on your local machine. But almost all Google services, so, you know, things like Google Drive and Calendar and Gmail, all those things are free services. Because as we know, you know, Google makes money the more we use the internet, so it's in their interests to give us all these services for free.
Absolutely. To make us use it more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So interesting times ahead.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, I'm still very impressed with what Adobe are doing with their cloud-based subscription for photographers. You know, this $10 a month for both Lightroom and Photoshop, I think, is quite a good deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously there are terms and conditions applied to that as well, so which we've discussed a couple of weeks ago. But anyway.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I had on my list, I know, you know, there are so many beautiful photographs out there on the web, you know, on 500px, on Flickr, Picasa, you know, all of these sites.
Naughtynuns.com. Oh, sorry, am I speaking out of turn?
But I did happen to see, again, on DIY Photography, this fantastic image. The story was called Photographer Captures Two Lightning Bolts Over the Grand Canyon. And there's actually a series of images, but the first one is just an absolute corker. So I'll throw that link in the show notes for anyone that wants to go and check it out.
They are very cool. And the good thing about it is also got a whole bunch of how he processed the images on there. So it's not just, oh, look at my cool photos.
Yep.
Here's how they're processed, which is kind of, it's always nice to see that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So kudos to him for doing that.
Definitely. And what have you got on your list?
That's it, dude. No, I've got lots of stuff. You've recalled me in the past mentioning David Duchemin.
Yes.
You want to try and talk to him? We should try and get him on the show.
I should reach out to him again, absolutely.
By chance, just today, I was chatting with a friend of mine who went and listened to him speak in Bali a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Said he was exceptionally good. And then I got home from chatting with her, and there's an email saying that they've just launched a downloadable or an online video series to watch done by him.
Oh, wow.
So basically, he did a creative weekend in Vancouver for like 30 photographers. And they're basically where they just sat and talked about vision and understanding vision and all the other weird and wonderful elements and artistic creative elements around it for like 3 days.
Oh, nice.
And they've videoed the whole thing, and they've collated it down to 14 hours
of footage,
which is quite astounding.
Yeah.
And they've just released it all on DV or on download to have a look-see at.
Right.
So I'm in the midst of...
What's the price? It's
about $80.
That's not too bad.
I think for 14 hours of content,
yeah.
I'm in the midst of downloading it, 10 gig of it right now.
Right.
to take with me... sit to watch on the plane for a bit.
Yeah.
But I do like the way this guy thinks.
You know, if you set it going the moment you hopped on the plane, you should just be able to get through it before you land.
Exactly. Or put me to sleep nicely, which is something I always struggle with on the plane anyway.
Yeah.
So win-win, Bruce. Yeah. I don't know if I'm – I love – some of his photos are great, but I'm not necessarily a huge fan of his style or his post-processing style possibly more than anything else.
Right.
But his way of thinking about photography is excellent. So if anyone wants to have a and look, on the same site, they've got a whole bunch of great e-books, which are only like $5 a book. So
yeah, yeah, right.
You don't invest you know, the whole $80, just spend $5 and give yourself something interesting to look at and have a read.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's one. Now, our friend Richard Clark sent through a couple of interesting pieces this week as well.
Okay, well, that was on Facebook, wasn't it?
On Facebook, yeah, and one of those was the Mount St. Helens.
Oh, that's right, yes. And to be honest, the first one's kind of slipped my mind, but the second one was amazing. That story just blew me away. About the guy who's
related for us.
I don't have. I'm not logged into Facebook, so I can't remember the guy's name. Okay, you do that. What was the guy's name?
Give me a sec to like
Robert somebody or other. But basically, the story was that this guy was at Mount St. Helens in 1982 when it erupted on the side of the mountain. And had been out there shooting because, you know, the volcanic activity had sort of stepped up. There was a feeling that things were getting exciting, that something could potentially happen. He was out there to shoot it as an avid landscape photographer. And then
Robert Landsberg.
Robert
Landsberg.
Landsberg, yeah. Things then, you know, accelerated way faster than he was prepared for. And he got to a point where he realized that he was not going to be able to get off the mountain and survive. He knew that he had left it too late to get out. And so he shot and shot and shot, all on film, of course, as much as he could from, you know, essentially ground zero as the lava was pouring down the mountain around him. And then at the very last minute, rewinds the film, you know, back into its canister, takes the film out of the camera, puts it into its little, you know, the little plastic container that canisters of film used to come in, put them back in the camera bag, so they were, you know, as wrapped up and as protected as much as possible, and then he lay down on the ground over the top of his backpack and let the lava wash over him, and he died, and it was a couple of weeks or months later before they found his body, but the backpack was underneath him and was protected, and they were able to get these rolls of film out and process them, and just mind-boggling. And as I said, I commented on it on Facebook and said, you know, in any normal human being, the natural instinct would be to just run and run and run and run, you know, as fast as you could.
Yeah, but we photographers are a tough group. That's right. Wouldn't have got me there in the first place. Silly, not silly, you know. There, oh dear. But it's astounding.
It's a phenomenal story.
Suffering for your art, for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's the ultimate prize.
Quite amazing. But the other one that our lovely Richard sent through is this photograph is not free.
And,
it's a little bit of hyperbole. That's isn't hyperbole.
Yeah, that's the one.
So spelt about the first sunset this guy took a photograph of in 2012, and it cost him $6,612 to take the photo.
Yeah.
And he broke it down that it cost him $12 in gas to drive to the spot.
Yep.
The camera he took cost $2,500. The lens was $1,600. The filters added up to like another $800 and so on and so forth.
And there was software to process it.
So, I mean, yeah, if you're only ever going to use those things once, I guess you could say that. But as my wife likes to say, the shoes aren't $500. They're about $1.50 a wear. If you wear them often enough. He's trying to make a bit of a statement by saying the photo cost $6,000. and it kind of didn't. But yeah, it is true. We do take for granted that photography is so-called free these days, and there is still a cost to buying gear.
Yeah.
But I think the big thing that most people aren't aware of is just the limitation of the shutter on cameras. You've only got X amount of shots in a camera before
That's right.
it's going to go.
Yep.
And the amount of warning you get before it goes is zip.
Yeah.
And if you've only got, if you're on a once in a lifetime holiday and you've only got your one camera with you and one shot's lovely and the next shot nothing's happening, well, that's it. You're out of a camera.
Yeah.
That's so you have digital photography. If you, I say, look at what your camera cost you to buy.
Yep.
Divided by the amount of shots the camera is actually capable of taking. It's rated for 70,000 shots or whatever.
Yep.
And see what per shot costs you.
Yeah, right.
And think about it. Yeah, think about the cost per shot. Every time you press that button, it's actually costing you 7 cents or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
There is a cost.
Yeah. And I liked at the end of that, again, I haven't got it in front of me, but he said right at the end, you know, so if I find that you've stolen my image, you know, without asking, this is how much I'm going to be sending you an invoice for. Well, fair enough. I mean, you have to, at least he can justify how he came up with the number. So, I mean, if he sent off that invoice to someone who did steal the image and they went, blow it out your butt, at least he can say, well, here's how I justify that number. You know, it's not like he just pulled a number out of his bum. I mean, you could say that he did, but at least some thought went into how that number came to be.
Exactly. It wasn't just, I think $700 is a fair price for 1 hour's work.
And I'm trying to think back. Was there any numerical value in there that accounted for the years of experience that got him to the skill level?
No.
And see, that's the other unknown.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
You know? I mean, we always get, you know, as photographers, we're always hearing that, oh, wow, you take amazing images, you must have a great camera. But, you know, no one puts any value on, you know, how long it took you to develop the skill to take that image.
Yeah.
And that exactly. needs to go into the calculation as well.
Yeah, I always put that when I'm doing workshops. You know, you've got to factor in if you're wanting to be a working photographer, well, you're paying me to teach you. You've got to factor that cost into your business. Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
If you're planning on doing 5 workshops in the course of a year, that's whatever thousands of dollars. Yep. You've got to factor that in. Yeah, you shouldn't be paying for that. Your family and your kids shouldn't be paying for that.
No. No, your customers should
business. Well, your business pays for it, and that's a business expense, and therefore to run your business costs this much.
Yep.
Therefore, you must charge this much
to
make sure your business is successful.
Definitely.
Yeah? And it never ceases to amaze me how many people spend a fortune going to workshops and sweet bugger all on going to a business school to learn how to do something about business.
Yeah, right.
It's just how to stay in business, how to fill in a tax form, how to apply for the right amount of right tax numbers and everything else. Yeah,
yeah.
The basics.
Yep.
Yeah, because a creative medium is photography, but it's got to be backed up by a solid foundation. And if your business sense
Definitely.
Is no good,
yeah,
that's why some of the world's most mediocre photographers are incredibly well off because they're great business people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hello, Michael Warshall, if you're listening.
Yeah.
anyway. So Nikon this week, we're going to thank the lovely Adam Davidson.
All right.
He's not that old. He's single, ladies, if anyone's out there. And he's unemployed, too, so he's a catch. he's a lovely fella. But he sent through the Nikon's put a patent through for an interchangeable sensor camera. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. They've put a patent so you can just swap out your sensor. So do every time they bring out a new sensor, pop out the old sucker, put in the new one.
Yeah, right. Wow.
That makes sense.
As in, it could just be one replaceable component within the camera body? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's effectively what it appears to be. Yeah.
Wow.
So it kind of makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking forward to having, like an Ilford FP4 sensor, like a black and white sensor. Yeah. Or like 30 sensors, yeah.
Well, that would be awesome. I reckon that would be awesome.
I think a black and white sensor.
No, I mean,
imagine if you could pop in like an infrared sensor.
Hey?
Imagine if you could pop in an infrared sensor just for like six shots.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Or a rotating sensor. Let's take it one step further. You know, you've got another dial on top of your camera. You've got your shutter speed dial, your aperture dial, and then your sensor dial. You turn it around and it flips the sensor. Yeah, you've got infrared, you've got black and white, you've got this whole range of...
Oh, so you're imagining all of the sensors living inside the body in one time.
Yes, and it just rotates around. The bodies are big enough, except for those little Olympus things and sucky stuff.
It's kind of like a microscope with its multiple different...
Exactly.
Just
wouldn't that be
around.
Cool? Yeah. Flip from one button, you're on infrared, flip the other way, goes back to normal. Yeah. Then you flip to make all my photos look good sensor. That'd be a... You know? Yeah, where's the unsuck sensor? So that's another lovely thing that our man Mr. Davidson sent through. And we love it when people send stuff through because we have to do a lot less work.
That's right.
It's kind of now who was it who sent through this week as well? And just let me obfuscate for a second whilst I look around and see
some research.
Oh, look at that! No, it was about researchers developing a method for getting high quality photos out of crappy lenses. Did you see that?
Oh, yes, I did see that, and I meant to make a note of that one, and it somehow
just made it for you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you did. That was interesting.
Was that the lovely David Osler? I saw him the other week.
G'day, did
David.
You?
Yeah, bumped into him at the digital show.
Oh, cool.
Down here in Melbourne.
G'day, David.
He's a good guy, David. Takes some very interesting photographs.
Yeah, right.
He's taken some lovely stuff. Him and his wife, Kerry.
Yeah. He's always taken photos of very gorgeous young girls.
Yeah, it's a curse, isn't it?
he's carved out a really horrible niche for himself there.
Yeah. Where's the ugly women's at, you know? Give me the ugly women's. Actually, I'm shooting one of them this week. So. the wife of the Civil War reenactment guy.
Oh, okay.
I got an email this week from the woman who runs the property that's got the old film set on for my upcoming casting call weekend.
Yeah.
Trying to source some new old models.
Oh, right. You know?
Because, yeah, I've been shooting the same old ones the last couple of times. I want someone different.
Right.
So she goes, oh, I've got this lovely garden gnome looking kind of little bloke. Yeah. Yeah, big beard, the whole thing, and a matching identical woman. I thought, what, same facial hair as well. So they're going to be interesting couple of people to shoot. But yes, I think it was David who sent that through, and I'm just
the sample images that they put up on the blog post, like in terms of the before and after, like the if they genuinely were the improvements from, you know, the crappy images to start with, that was amazing.
But here's the thing, okay, so they've developed a way of getting high-quality photos from crappy lenses.
Yeah.
The photos they're showing are making crappy photos slightly less crappy.
Yes, exactly.
Show me a decent photograph made better with this lens, this technology. Don't show me a crappy photo of a phone box with no decent light,
meter.
No interest, no drama, no anything. A crappy picture of a bit of a branch of a tree. Show me a photograph that was really well shot.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just a bit soft, or it's a bit of distortion, or just a little something that the cheaper lens was not quite cutting the mustard.
Yep.
And you apply this software and all of a sudden, hello. Yeah, you've got a great photo.
Yeah.
Yeah, show me that.
Maybe there are limitations to just how good this technology is.
Yeah, they've got photos of drain grates. Come on, of a grate on. Of a parking meter. Of a bit of a fence post. Come on. Show me one decent photo from it. But it's still, yeah, once again, as we did say the other week, yeah, that the change, well, I said, the change of photography is really only going to start from now.
Yeah.
You know, all we've done is digitize, and now we're going to start seeing change. Maybe this is one of these ways that's going to change that. There's all going to be software ways of developing. Yeah, we said software to sharpen out of focus photos, software to sharpen blurry photos, software to make crap lenses good. Yeah, it's possible. I'm still waiting for the camera though that I just tell it what I want photos of, and it goes out and does it for me. The ultimate lazy man's photographer. You know.
Yeah,
that would just be fantastic.
Look, I'm keen to see where this goes, but at the end of the day, is it ever going to be as good as having gone out with good glass and shot the image competently in the first place. Like, I come back to the analogy of garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
You know.
But that's just so last century thinking.
Right.
If my computer, my all-powerful technology can do stuff for me, it should be out. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe once again, even if the technology can do it in the future, is it going to be as soulful and satisfying to go out and take bad photos and have software fix them? At the end of the day.
Who knows?
Yeah. Would I feel good coming home with all these just average to blurt photographs and going, oh, you know, once I put them in the sharpener, whatever it's going to be called, the fixerator. There we are. We should patent that name right now. Copyright it. The fixerator. And all my photos look awesome. Yeah, it's going to put a sunset from over the left-hand side. Well, it's going to put these clouds in the sky. It's going
to... You know what immediately comes to mind?
What's that?
Antares Auto-Tune.
You know, I was thinking exactly the same thing.
And you want to know about soul in music today? It's non-existent.
You've got to have soul.
But it's not...
And a bit of R&B.
Yeah.
And a bit of blues.
But, you know, I mean, there's so much crap music being produced with Auto-Tune. Now, you know, I'm not bagging Auto-Tune. As a plugin, it is a brilliant piece of software. What it was designed to do originally was to fix, you know, minor, you know, pitch-related, you know, fluctuations and to flatten things out. And, yeah, it was meant to be used sparingly and it was... You know, sure, recording Believe and, you know, the guy bringing up the plug-in and having it, you know, just set to wacky, you know, off-the-chart settings by accident and sure hearing it and going, wow, that's amazing, what is that, that started the whole trend and, you know, it's just gone over the cliff like a herd of lemmings ever since. But, you know, it's kind of the equivalent, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
You know, you say, you know, in the future, you're going to throw all your images through the fixerator. Will it have any soul? No, yeah. It won't. It won't have any soul, yeah. But it'll be just like the music that's being produced now.
Yeah. I think you've probably hit that one right on the head. So, anyway. Yeah, just get out there and take decent photos.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because there's a lot more at the end of the day, you know. It's an art form and you just want to enjoy it and do it for the pleasure, for the love, for the passion, for the joy, not for the fixing stuff later because I can't do it.
That's the thing. I mean, for me, you know, the real joy in landscape photography is getting out there and seriously thinking through what are all the things I have to do to capture the image that I see in my mind or, you know, that's going to closely represent what I'm seeing with my eyes. Knowing that my camera can't capture the dynamic range that I can see, how can I deal with that? No, it's all of those mental hoops that make it fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Each to their own, of course.
Yeah, if you're into 10-pin bowling, you want to get the perfect game. You want to get into it's the years of honing that skill. It's the journey. I collect antique books, as you may or may not know.
Yep.
Rare fishing books, you know, back into the 1700s sort of thing.
Right.
And the journey is the search is part of the joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The year, I might take me years before I find a book.
Right.
But I'll be looking. And it's that never ending quest and search, which is part of the buzz and part of the joy of the walking into a store and smelling the old leather.
Yeah. You
know?
Right.
That's all part of the buzz of that particular sport. Well, and I know that buzz will keep me going for years. I'll be able to do that for the rest of my life and always get that buzz.
Yeah.
Well, that's what photography should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
we should get that buzz from going out and doing it and trying to get better. We always want to be better. We always want to find that next great thing.
Yeah.
But we should do it with lust in
by
our hearts.
By honing skills rather than just tweaking software.
Yeah, by sheer lust in our hearts. And the tool that's in our hand is where we want to have the joy, you know? And, you know,
so many ways to misinterpret that.
Yeah. I just thought it was about six or seven of them just then. But you know what I mean? It's yeah, that's where the passion is. You know, are we passionate when we sit in front of a computer? I don't think so.
No.
Are we passionate when we stand on the edge of the Grand Canyon and survey the amazing morning light, the fog rising from the river dam below? Yeah. And the birds flying up in the sky. Oh. And the kangaroos hopping. No, there's a difference altogether. But you know what I mean? That's the joy and the passion and the love that we do this for, not for, you know, sitting in front of a computer and trying a different crop. And yeah, that's part of it, but it's not the be all and end all, you know?
Yeah. But those are things that are as you say, trying different crops. That's sort of a follow-on process. It's not a replacement for crappy skill in the field.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, anyway.
Well, I've got a challenge. I just thought of one just then.
Yeah?
I've got a challenge for something I'm going to be doing for India, and I thought, let's just throw it out there. I want people to go and try and find an old postcard of their town.
Whoa.
An old photo online of their town and go and recreate it.
Wow. How would you recreate it?
Listen, just capture roughly the same angle. You have to try and capture the same thing.
Oh, okay, right.
Just go and shoot it how it looks now and capture an old photo from online and
do
a before and after.
Wow. That's a great one.
So I'm doing that with India. I'm collecting old postcards of what places used to look like, 50, 60, 80, 100 years ago.
Nice.
And then trying to locate the same angle and
that's great.
It's all part of the joy of travel and what photography can do as well, I guess, is be able to capture those differences.
Yeah. No, that's a great one. Interestingly, for me, there's a shopping centre not far from where we live. It's only a 3-minute driveway called Erin Affair. And in the food court, there is a hemispherical dome over the top of the food court, and around the rim of it is a whole montage of historical photos from the Gosford area, from the late 1800s to the sort of early 1900s. So I should go down there and look for some inspiration.
Pluck one off the walls. I see what you're saying. Get it now.
But just look for some notable landmarks that maybe still exist that would act as a reference point.
Google up your location and see what old vintage and your location, or old and your location.
Historical.
Hysterical, those things.
Yep.
And give yourself a cut. Let's give it over the next few weeks whilst I'm away and so we can get people to find some stuff and post it.
Yeah. Now, while you're talking about you being away, you're away for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So there won't be a podcast next week unless Glenn happens to find himself.
What are we
going
to listen to next week then?
We could.
Oh, sorry, I don't listen anyway. That's right. Yeah. So I'll listen to something good.
Fair enough. So there won't be a podcast next week,
no.
But hopefully we will record a couple of days after Glenn gets back, which will be sort of
with
late.
Special guest star, hopefully he'll be staying in the spare bedroom.
Yes, with potentially a guest, which would be great.
Yeah, but you have to share a headphone with him, so I'm not sure. I'll take care of you. If his ears look clean, we can do it.
Excellent.
But that's about it for me, my friend. I'm going to go and pack up and get myself
excellent.
Some sleep
since I
lost the power in my house for 3 hours last night, so I was up for 3 hours between 12.
That's right. You guys had really strong winds down there, didn't you?
Yeah, 140 kilometre an hour winds, and we lost lots of trees in the street.
I told you,
in half,
so. Stay away from that Indian cuisine.
Man,
jeez,
means. I'll tell you what. Hello.
Yeah. Oh well, I'm glad you were safe. Through all
of them. Well, I know one lady who lost the roof of her house and had to go huddle all her kids in the car, which is a bit of a scary thing to scary thing to have to do. So half the trees in the street lost major limbs.
It was a
fairly loud and eventful evening. So I didn't get a lot of sleep, so I'll get myself a bit of kip, because I don't sleep well on planes, and it's 30 odd hours get to where I'm going. With all the, it's like his flights that stop in Melbourne, stop in Sydney, airline is Q sit. It's travel.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so between queuing and sitting, there's probably not a lot of time to sleep.
That's it. All right, mate. Will you enjoy your trip?
I will indeed.
Travel safely.
Thank you.
And, hopefully you don't end up with any full body searches from Homeland Security.
Oh, I was hoping for a couple, but there you go. Ruined my trip. Go on.
All right, mate. We'll talk to you when you get back.
See you, everybody.
Bye. See ya.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.